former Commons Deputy Speaker Nigel Evans was cleared of a string of sexual offences against men, including one count of rape. And the MP broke down in tears when the not guilty verdicts were read out. He described the past 11 months as hell and said he wanted to return to his parliamentary work. And he's called for a review of anonymity rules which allowed his seven accusers to keep their identities secret. So should defendants in sexual offence cases have their identities protected until they are found guilty? Does the stigma stay with them regardless of the outcome? Or could anonymity in some cases prevent further victims from coming forward? 08459 555 678. Joining me to discuss this, the former head of the UK's Child Exploitation and Online Protection Centre, Jim Gamble, and the commentator, Christine Hamilton. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So Christine, where do you stand on this one? I mean, reading that in the last number of days, Nigel Evans is saying that, you know, this was a very public execution attempt. I mean, is that how you view it?
I haven't actually heard that phrase before, but I don't think that's far wrong in this case. I mean, the starting point of this whole very, very difficult debate is that we all want the same outcome, don't we? We all want not a single guilty person to go free. Equally, none of us wants a single innocent person to have to go through the utter hell. I mean, his life is wrecked, frankly. He'll be able to rebuild it to a certain extent, but it's wrecked, of Nigel Evans or Bill Roach or any of the other people that we've seen go through this. So it's a question of how do we find a balance that can best achieve that. I mean, no law is perfect. And, you know, quite rightly, victims get anonymity only for rape. It's the only crime where you're granted anonymity. In all other cases, you know, accused and victim face each other in open court, and it's all out in the open. And I just think the time has come. At the very least, what we should be thinking about is giving those accused anonymity at the bottom line until they have been charged. I mean, people's names are out there. They haven't even been charged with anything. I mean, Anil and I, we were arrested very, very publicly by the police in 2001, and we were not actually charged with rape, but it was all over the newspapers for weeks on end. Fortunately, we never had to go to court and go through all the hell. We'd never met the girl in our lives before. The whole thing should never, ever have been brought, but certainly our names shouldn't have been out. Now, I just think the time has come to redress the balance.
Do you feel, from the experience that you had, that, you know, even though you were cleared, that there are people out there who still, you know, mud sticks almost result of it, and you can never, ever get rid of that?
Absolutely right. I mean, in a way, you've just illustrated the point. I'm not getting at you. You said you were cleared. We weren't cleared. We were never charged. So there was nothing to clear us of, as it were. So, I mean, certainly the other day I was very publicly on the airwaves in the wake of the Bill Roach case, because Bill, like Nigel Evans, is a friend of mine. And somebody put out on Twitter words to the effect, of course she would defend Bill Roach. She and her husband got away with it too. Now, it's that there's not a lot of that. Most people realise very quickly that it was ridiculous as far as we were concerned. But of course there's always the no mud, no smoke without fire and mud sticks. And poor Nigel Evans, he's had intimate details of his life, in excruciating detail, combed through in the court. I mean, it's horrendous that anybody has had to go through that. And, you know, of course, when an allegation is made, it has to be looked at. Nobody's saying the Crown Prosecution were wrong to take the allegation seriously, etc., etc. But I can't help thinking that if Nigel Evans had been Mr. Ordinary, Mr. Everyday, this case, on the flimsiest of evidence, would never have been brought. Three of his alleged victims said that they didn't even regard themselves as victims. Now, these aren't children who obviously don't necessarily realise they're victims. These are grown men who didn't want to testify against him. It was a nonsense on stilts, and poor Nigel has paid a very heavy price.
I want to bring Jim Gamble in on this. You know, very public cases, and both recently, you know, Bill Roach acquitted, and Nigel Evans, as we were saying, you know, dragged through this process, as Christine has alluded to. I mean, where do you stand on the idea of defendants in sexual offence cases having their identities protected until they are actually found guilty?
Well, I think I agree with Christine. This needs to be a balanced judgment. You know, first of all, victims need to be encouraged to come forward. And in some cases, when you have particularly predatory paedophiles, you will want to engage other potential victims in a way that enables them to come forward and corroborate evidence. But there are ways and means of doing that, and I absolutely support the concept of anonymity for those people alleged who are not yet proven guilty, because the stigma that sticks to this is one like no other crime. And there is no doubt, once the allegation has been made, there are people for a variety of reasons, some of them malign and some of them potentially political, who will choose to stir the pot. If you're a high-profile individual and you've been investigated, you are certainly going to weather a storm unlike any other. And the balance is key to me. And I think the Nigel Evans case brings up a number of critical issues. The Crown Prosecution Service make an independent judgment. So once an allegation is made, it has to be investigated. The police will investigate, collect evidence, and if they're sufficient, they put that to the Crown Prosecution Service. The CPS must make a decision, and that decision must be that there is a likelihood of a successful prosecution if they go ahead. So I don't want to second-judge that. What I do know as well is, though, that Nigel Evans now, somewhat ironically, is placed in this position where he spent his life savings. And this is where I feel for other defendants who perhaps don't have the life savings to defend themselves robustly in these cases, not least because this government have absolutely diminished the access to legal aid that's been there for people. So there are three key issues here. One, there should be anonymity. There's no doubt about that. Two, it's for the CPS to speak to the evidence which they had. And three, about the ability of people to appropriately and adequately defend themselves.
People look at politicians, Christine, and they'll you know, and this is absolutely wrong. Just because, you know, it's a politician, almost, it's almost as if there's less sympathy because of how people view politicians. But this is a man who's had mud thrown at him, who has now gone to clear his name, and has been quite rightly pointed out, it has cost him £130,000 legal bill to do it. His savings has gone. He said that in his darkest moments he considered committing suicide. And it's almost as if, well, you know, in terms of, I think the Crown Prosecution Service used the phrase, you know, it was still correct to bring the case. It was still the right decision to bring the case to court. And yet, you know, it's almost as if the injustice to Mr. Evans has been caused maybe once, twice, three times.
Well, I think the Crown Prosecution Service, in my view, they are suffering a kind of collective guilt, along with some of the police, for not acting in the Savile case, and we now have the Cyril Smith case rearing its head. I mean, that is just horrendous. And I think they went into overdrive. I'm not going to use the word witch hunt, but they went into overdrive. And Nigel, it was nearly a year ago when he was first arrested. And I actually don't think he would have been arrested now. I mean, the Crown Prosecution Service, their argument is, you know, oh, well, we can't always be certain we're going to secure a conviction, and we can't only prosecute in those cases where we know we're going to get a conviction. Of course they can't. But what I think is another worrying aspect of this, I mean, leaving aside the devastation of Nigel's life, I think any case like this where it is the case is thrown out, it's going to make it that much more difficult for people to come forward. And I think Jim mentioned this. We must do absolutely nothing to put off genuine victims. And anything, we've had huge strides in the last, well, Jim probably knows better than I do, 10, 15, 20 years in encouraging people to come forward. It's much, much easier now for people to do so. But it's still a horrendous ordeal if you've actually really been raped to have to go through it in court. And anything that stops that, and I honestly think this was a frivolous prosecution. I don't think it would have been made today. A year ago, things were different. And as I said, I don't think it would have been made if Nigel had not been an MP. But I'm sure you're right, just to go back to the beginning of your question. And there isn't much sympathy for MPs out there for fairly obvious reasons. But, you know, put aside the fact that he's an MP, he's just a person in the public eye. Nigel is one of the nicest, most likeable, genuine, friendly, fun people. And okay, he was drinking a bit too much, but when I first heard these allegations, I just knew there is absolutely no way he was guilty of rape. I mean, it's absurd, absolutely absurd. And you know, if the Crown Prosecution Service hadn't been quite so zealous, they might have realised.
We mentioned balance, Jim, of course, and you know the other side of that coin is that there have been occasions where releasing the name has encouraged some victims to actually come forward because they know that the person has been arrested. So it's striking that balance, isn't it? And Christine's made the point almost, you know, the biggest obstacle and perhaps the most damage that's caused to the case of those who have been victims is brought about by those who make false accusations.
Yeah, but let's be very clear, you know, statistically, false allegations are minuscule. Statistically, they are minuscule. And when you delve into the false allegations that are seen to be there, very often there are complex issues at play, you know, for example, mental health and other issues. But of course, there will be, no matter how few, some false allegations. The bottom line is we've got to learn the lessons post-Savile. We've got to be balanced. We need to retain a sense of proportionality. But at the heart of that, we have to be victim-centric. And I think the thing is this, encouraging people to come forward is more than simply throwing someone's name out there as a kind of lottery to see who then comes forward and says. It's about looking at that case, considering whether there's evidence of a predatory nature, and then engaging. So if you had been looking at the Savile case, I would like to have thought that they would have been writing to people in the different institutions that he had had access to, even if he'd been granted anonymity during the investigation, to say, we're carrying out an investigation into some systematic abuse that has taken place by an individual we think it could have been within your institution or organization.
But not naming the individual in the letters. You wouldn't name the individual in the letters.
No, not in the first instance, because that actually strengthens the evidence when people then come forward and say, well, actually, I have carried this weight and I now want to... So it is about balance. It's about a case-by-case basis. But the principle should be that people should not be tried in the court of public opinion. People should be able to go to court. Their accusers should be treated with dignity. But that needs to be mutual, up to and until that person is convicted. They are innocent until proven guilty. And people will come and say, well, we don't do it in other crimes. No other crime attaches this stigma. And you know what? You'd rather go to prison as anything rather than a sex offender or a child abuser. And I do think it's time to reflect on this and for there to be some kind of review that looks at whether or not we're getting it right. My other concern on the focus historically, which I think is appropriate, is making sure we have the right organizations in place to support these investigations, but making sure that we're not diverting all of the contemporary policing resources in a way that means there's not enough, and in my experience this is happening, to protect children from contemporary abuse today. We need to get the balance right here, and there are so many children living in abusive situations today where we need to be able to intervene and rescue them from that. And I do think a review at this stage would be a good thing.
Okay. Jim Gamble, Christine Hamilton, thank you